Good day, and welcome to the Social Security's quarterly all-in payments conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Kimberly Cutler. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you so much, sir. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our first quarterly all-in payments call of 2022. I am Kim Cutler, the TPEN payments manager, and I am the host of today's call. The purpose of today's call is to provide clarification on processes and procedures related to payments. So we do have a few agenda items that we're going to cover today. We are going to go over some announcements that we want to share, end-of-year stats, end of 2021 year stats. We are going to share the 2022 child work level SGA, blind SGA amount, the 2022 ticket payment rates. We also have some ePay stats, ePay file stats. We do have a few ePay reminders. We are going to cover the 24-month age claim rule. And then, of course, we're going to make sure you are aware of different resources that are available to your EN. And once we've completed all of the agenda items, we will open up for questions and answers. All right, so one of the first things we want to provide an announcement to all service providers. SSA did send out a Gov delivery message on January the 10th, alerting ENs of the security awareness form requirement. So on this call, we wanted to just provide that reminder that the deadline for submitting the annual security awareness form certification using the form SSA 222 and the addendum is due, that deadline is February 28, 2022. Please note that failure to complete and return these documents by the due date will result in your EN's ticket portal access being blocked. It could result in your portal access being blocked, a hold placed on your EN, and possible termination. All EN staff must review, sign, and keep a copy of the form on file at your EN location. Now, in addition to signing the individual form or forms and keeping them on site, the signatory authority or suitable contact must complete a copy of the attached addendum form that lists all staff who have completed the form for your EN. And then you must submit that addendum via email. And here on this slide, you can actually see where you need to submit that information to, which is Security Awareness Training 222 at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And again, you want to submit that by the deadline of Monday, February the 28th. Make sure that you include your DUNS number in the subject of the email. And also, there's another note. If a single person runs your EN, you may submit a signed copy of the Security Awareness Form or SSA 222 via email. So then the addendum is not required. So if it's just a single person, you do not have to submit the addendum. Your EN will need to sign and submit the addendum electronically. Please note that SSA will not accept a scanned version of the form. So, again, there was an email that went out on January 10th letting you all know about the security awareness requirement. So we just wanted to provide this reminder that the deadline is February the 28th. So we're going to move on to our next slide here is where you can see the 2021 end-of-year stats. So just wanted to note that during the year of 2021 that over $97 million were paid out in ticket payments. There were a total of 153,759 payments made. We processed 68,830 denials. And just wanted to provide you all with the most common denial reason, which was denial reason 02, which is beneficiary receiving federal cash benefits. And just wanted to note that this denial code indicates that the EN has submitted a claim for an outcome payment and the ticket holder is listed in current pay status in Social Security's records. Please remember that in order to receive outcome payments, a ticket holder must be in a suspense or non-payment status due to worker earnings. Another quick reminder we wanted to add regarding this denial is once a ticket holder enters the outcome period, meaning they are no longer receiving a federal cash benefit, due to worker earnings, then phase one milestones and phase two milestones are no longer payable. Now, any missed phase one milestones or phase two milestones will be paid at reconciliation after the 12th outcome. So just wanted to provide kind of break down what that denial reason means, because that's the one that was the highest number of denials during the year last year, and what that actually denial reason means. So that's your year-end stats for 2021. Here on our next slide, we actually now have the 2022 trial work level and substantial gainful activity amounts, which is or SGA. So the trial work level for 2022 is $970. The substantial gainful activity amount is $1,350. And then the blind SGA amount is $2,260. So those are your 2022 trial work level and SGA amounts. We also have the 2022 payment rates. So I just wanted, and on this slide, you can actually see the breakdown of those payment rates based on the entitlement, based on the benefit that the ticket holder, what they're receiving. So for the milestone outcome method payments, for SSI payments, for phase one milestone, that payout amount is $1,544. For phase two milestones, it's $262. And for outcomes, it's $262. And that's for SSI payments. For SSDI payments, phase one milestone payout is the same. It's $1,554 for phase one. And phase two milestone payouts would be $463. And outcomes would be $463 as well. And those are the rates under the milestone outcome payment method. So if you are an EN that's under the outcome-only method, then for SSI, your payouts would be $487. SSDI is $862. And just wanted to note that the pay rates and that information should be updated in SSA's database the first of next month. So we just want to make you aware that these are the 2022 trial work level and SGA amounts, and also the 2022 payment rates. Okay, and just wanted to let you know that the last e-pay file was completed in November of 2021, and here we have some processing totals from that last e-pay file. So there were a total of 13,083 total claims processed. We paid a little over 4,000 SSN, and the total payout amount for the last e-pay file was a little over $6 million. So those are just the stats from the last e-pay file, but wanted to let you know that the next e-pay file is coming soon. And so on the next slide here, we have a few e-pay reminders. So just remember that, ENs, you may submit payment requests through the ticket portal instead of waiting for e-pay. So you don't necessarily have to wait for the e-pay file. You can submit your payment request through the portal. And phase one milestone four is now paid via e-pay, but ENs must still submit payment requests for phase one milestones one through three through the ticket portal with proof of relationship. Also note that unassigned tickets are not included in ePay. So if the ticket has been unassigned from your EN, that SSN will not be included on the ePay file. And ENs must have passed their annual service and support reviews to be eligible for ePay. And the last reminder is that the ePay file is processed in order of SSN not done. And we always try to provide this reminder, especially this reminder, because, again, because the file is processed in order of SSN not done, you know, once we start processing the e-pay file, your EN may receive a lot of payments because of the order of the SSN, but then you may not receive payments for another day or two. So we always stress that it is processed in order of SSNs and not done. And like I stated earlier, we, TPM and SSA, we are going to start processing the next e-pay file soon, So we wanted to provide these reminders. And also, once we start processing the ePay file, SSA will post an announcement in the portal. So you guys will be able to see once we start processing that next ePay file. Now, the next couple of slides, what we want to review is the 24-month age claim rule. We just want to make sure that everyone's on the same page and have the understanding of how this rule actually, we actually apply this rule when processing payments. So an EIN shall request a payment no later than 24 months following the month the ticket holder's work and earnings meet the criteria for SSA to make the payment. SSA will not accept payment requests for periods outside this 24-month window. And so what we're going to do on the next couple of slides is we're going to move into some examples. So for phase two milestones or outcomes, right, if an EIN requests a phase two milestone or outcome payment for a claim month more than 24 months old, the payment is no longer available for that claim month. So the EIN can request the same payment. So you can request a phase two milestone or outcome, but you will have to make a request for a claim month that's within the 24-month window. So here we have an example. EIN ABC submits a payment request for phase two milestone one for the claim month, October 2019. So the case is denied, and you're going to see a denial reason, request received more than 24 months after claim month. You will also see the comment. So not only will you see the denial reason in the code, you're also going to see the comment. And the comment will read, per the TPA's conditions for receipt of payments rule, this phase two or outcome, whichever payment you're requesting, claim month is outside the 24-month EINs have to request ticket payments. So if you do submit for, like I said, a phase two milestone or an outcome payment and it is denied due to this reason, then the EIN would need to resubmit for phase two milestone one. In this example, you would need to resubmit for phase two milestone one for a claim month that is within 24 months after the requested claim month. So just want to make sure that for phase two milestones and outcomes, if you submit for payment request and your claim month is outside of the 24 months and from when the ticket holder earned the money, the case will be denied, and you will have to resubmit for that phase two milestone or outcome payment with a claim month that is within 24 months. So that's for phase two milestones and outcomes. So we wanted to make sure we provided an example and clarification for those payment types. Moving to the next slide, we're talking about claim months more than 24 months old for phase one milestones. If an EIN requests a phase one milestone payment within 24 months, and the key word there, payments within 24 months, following the month the ticket holder's work and earnings meet the criteria for SSA to make the payment with proof of relationship that passes review, and per SSA record, the correct attainment month for the payment is outside of the 24-month window. What I wanted to emphasize here is that the EINs are requesting payment within the 24 months. And the reason why I mentioned, you know, that you submitted it with the proof of relationship, you have to remember that when requesting payments for phase one milestones 1 through 3, you must provide proof of relationship. So that's why I wanted to mention that if you're submitting for phase one milestone one, it's within the 24-month window, and you've submitted proof of relationship that passed review, but SSA record has a correct attainment month that's outside of the 24-month window. So because you've done your part, you submitted your request within 24 months, but SSA's record shows an attainment month that's earlier than that, and it's outside of the 24-month window. What will happen is, for that case, SSA will deny the requested claim month as an incorrect claim month. But in addition, SSA will now create a work case for the correct attainment month, and they're going to deny it as an age claim. The EIN can now request and receive the next phase one milestone payment if it is available, And the missed phase one milestone payment will be available at reconciliation. I know I just said a lot there, so let's go to an example, right? So here you can see EN ABC submits a payment request for phase one milestone one for claim month March 2020 with proof of relationship, but there is an earlier payment month for phase one milestone one at 12/20/19 in SSA system. So how we're going to address this, the payment request submitted by the EN, that phase one milestone one payment request at March 2020 will be denied. You'll see the denial reason that will state incorrect phase one claim month requested by EN, and you'll get to see the comment that explains that. So the comment is earlier payment month payable at 12/20/19 per earnings on SSA record or information provided by the EN. So in that denial comment, you will be able to see what that earlier attainment month is. So because you did your due diligence and you submitted your request within 24 months, but we can't ignore that there is an earlier attainment month in SSA's database that would satisfy the payment, we're going to deny your request. But we're going to create a brand new case with the correct attainment month for phase one milestone one at 12/20/19. Now, we're going to create that case, but we're going to deny it, and you will see the denial reason, correct attainment month more than 24 months ago. You're going to see the comment, correct attainment month for phase one milestone one is 12/20/19. This will be paid at reconciliation. So, again, it's very important that you look at the comment, because we're telling you what's going to happen with your phase one milestone one payment. So you're not missing out on that payment. You will pick it up in reconciliation. And because we have addressed the phase one milestone one, the ENs can now request phase one milestone two payment, again, if it's available. And like I stated, the missed phase one milestone payment will be available at reconciliation. So the important thing to remember here is SSA, they're not going to penalize the EN because the SSA's database have an earlier attainment month that happens to be outside of the 24-month window. We're going to deny it so that we can make sure the system will pick it up in a reconciliation payment. And rather than holding ENs up, because this was a recent change, I think this change was last year, so before this step, what would happen, what we were dealing with was if you submitted a claim and it was within 24 months, but SSA had an earlier attainment month in the system, we would deny your case, provide you with the correct attainment month. ENs would then have to resubmit for that claim. So SSA has taken that, all that extra step out for the EN, and we're just acknowledging what's in the system. Well, we're acknowledging what you are submitting as an EN. We are acknowledging the earlier attainment month in the in SSA's database, and we're creating these denials so that the system will automatically pick up the phase one milestone one that the ENs missed because of the earlier attainment month in SSA's database. We're going to pick that up, and you'll get it in reconciliation, right, after you've received 12 outcome payments. That's when reconciliation will kick in for any missed milestones. So just want everyone to be clear, but the key takeaway from here is to please make sure for all payment types, phase ones, phase twos, and outcomes, please make sure that you are very mindful of when you are submitting for those payments. You want to make sure that you are, as soon as you have access to the claim month and you have the earnings to satisfy the payment, you want to make sure that you're submitting that request because you want it. You want to submit your request within that 24-month period so that you are able to go ahead and get the payments that you are requesting. So, again, just want to make sure we kind of went over that again because we don't want the ENs missing out on any of your phase ones. So we all have to do our part, again, making sure that you are submitting your payment request within the 24-month window. Okay, so that's the age claim rule. So just wanted, so we had some agenda topics and we've covered all of the topics at this point, but we do want to invite you to share topics that you would be interested in discussing through this forum. because, of course, our goal is to help educate you and provide clarification on process and procedures related to payments. So please, if you have any topics that you would like for us to discuss in this form, so any payment-related topics, please make sure that you send your topics to the EN Payments Help Desk. And here you can see that that email address is enpaymentshelpdesk@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. We do have our agenda topics and things that we want to discuss, things that we need to discuss to provide clarification on certain payment-related processes, but we just want to make sure that you guys are involved as well. So if you do have any payments topic, please send that over to us so we can include it, we can review it, and possibly include it as one of our topics for the next All EN Payments call. Okay, so again, that concludes the agenda part of the agendas that we have for today's call. But on the next slide, I wanted to make sure you guys are aware of the resources that we have, and you do see this here. Please make sure you're reaching out to the help desk. They are available Monday through Friday between the hours of 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you have the different options there when calling. Please also feel free to email the help desk. Please make sure you remember that we cannot email any personal identifiable information. It can't be encrypted. It can't be attached. We cannot send any PII via email. But for payment issues, please, again, if you want to email them, you have your email address there. And for questions and issues related to ticket assignment or the service provider website and the ticket portal, you also have a resource available to you, which is the EN Systems Help at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. So please just make sure if you have any payment-related questions that you are contacting the help desk. Again, if you are contacting the help desk via email, please do not include any personal identifiable information. What you can do when you're reaching out for payment-related issues via email is to include your work case number. That information is in the portal. It is associated with the case. So you can always submit the work case number via email. Okay, so again, that concludes the presentation portion of today's call. What I would like to do now is open the line for any payment-related questions. I just want to remind you that if you would like information on a specific case, we do encourage you to contact the EN Payments Help Desk so that they conduct a detailed review of the case. Because, again, on this form, we're not readily available access to the particulars of your case. So if you're dealing with a denial or you have questions about a denial, please reach out to the help desk because they would be able to look at that case and all the information that led to the decision of the denial. So please make sure you're reaching out to the EN Payments Help Desk for those specific questions. But we will go ahead and open the line up. We will take questions from the phone line first, and then we will also take questions from the chat. So, Cody, if you don't mind, can we open the phone queues for any questions?
Absolutely. Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is *1 if you'd like to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to. And we'll take our first question from Jeannie Hatchenberg. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. This is Gina Hackenberg with Paralyzed Veterans of America. I had a hypothetical, Kim, about the 24-month age claim rule.
Yes,
So my understanding is that if there's an earlier attainable month, you're going to deny it, let us know the date of the early attainable month, deny it as an aged claim. So we can we'll hypothetically say that was for P1M1. Is it my understanding that we would just leave that alone, let it be paid through reconciliation later, and then we would submit P1M2 based on that earlier attainable month?
Part of that is correct. So with you, in that scenario, yes, you would kind of like the phase one milestone one that was denied. Well, let me back up. If we're talking about a phase one milestone one, those are the ones that will be picked up in reconciliation, right? So you would let us take care of that. We would deny that. You would see why we're denying it. We would recreate the case for the correct attainment month, and then you would resubmit for your phase one milestone two. But just remember, because we're denying the phase one milestone one at whatever that earlier attainment month that's in the system, that month, and Katie, you might have to correct me if I'm wrong, that month will not be contributed towards your next milestone payment because it's already outside of the window. So you would move on with your next available payment, which would be phase one milestone two.
But are we basing our P1 M2 on our original P1 M1 request or on the earlier attainable month? Sorry.
Okay.
That y'all identified.
I think it would.
You see what I'm saying?
I do. So I think that it would be based on the month that you submitted, because the one that we're going to pay per SSA's database is already outside of the 24-month window,
right.
But the one that you requested was within the 24-month window.
I gotcha. So we move forward with our timeline that we originally, because I was thinking about the proof of relationships and pay stubs that would have been submitted along with it. So it would need to correspond with our original request.
Right.
Okay. Gotcha.
So you would just add two more additional months for your phase one to satisfy your phase one milestone two.
Right. So it's basically y'all are just saying, hey, this is what you should have done, but keep going. Keep moving forward.
But not to say what you should have done. We're just saying we can't ignore the earnings that's in SSA database. So we're going to acknowledge that month, but you did your work. You submitted it. You submitted your claim within 24 months. So that's the key, making sure that you're submitting within 24 months, and that's how you would be able to move forward with including that month in your phase one milestone two.
Of course. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And currently there are no additional questions in the queue. Ever once again, that's star one if you'd like to ask a question. And we'll take our next question from Hamid Abaji. Please go ahead.
Yes, I have a question.
Sure.
Yes, hi. So let's see. So it's about the work case number out of the portal. Now, I've tried to look for it, and I have a hard time finding that. So I just wanted to clarify, is the case number, is that the same as the reference number? Is that the same?
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, that's a relief. That's what I thought. That was an easy question because before I had been looking all over the place in the portal, and I was like, oh, okay, it's the reference number. So, all right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And there are no additional questions in the queue at this time. Again, however, once again, that's star one.
Okay.
We'll take another question from Freddie Floyd.
All right.
Sorry about that. We'll open it up to Freddie Floyd.
Okay.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Freddie Floyd with Return to Work Consultants, and my question is, I submitted a payment request for Milestone 1, Phase 1, and it was denied, stating that the person did not have enough earnings. Well, I spoke with a payment specialist, and they said when the lady first started working, she received two checks, and both of those checks equal up to $535.66, which she said she should have qualified for the, the phase one, master one. So I'm just going to make sure, is the cutoff for the first payment request has to be for $930-some?
So there is a chance, or ENs are allowed to submit for phase one, master one, if the beneficiary earned at least 50% of child work level.
Yes, okay.
So So if that case, like you said, if it was denied because of not enough earnings, if the beneficiary did earn at least 50% of child work level that month, but the requirement is they have to earn at least child work level one of the following 2 months. So if they earn 50% 1 month, they have to have child work level one of the next 2 months. But if this case, the claim month is December 2019, and so we don't have one of the next 2 months yet, and you submit for payment at 50% of child work level, then that payment should undergo review and should be processed if all other payment criteria are met.
Okay, because
so I would encourage you to resubmit.
Okay, she started in the middle of the month, and her earnings total, I'll say the net, not the net, but the gross, not the net earning was $530. I had to figure it up, $530 some. And it was my understanding that we should have been paid at least, her earnings total was $535.66, which was the net, not the gross. The gross was more, of course. So I'm looking at, I think maybe we should have been paid. And the code that gave, I looked up the code for the reason why we were not paid was because the beneficiary did not earn enough money within those 2 weeks' time.
Okay. Yeah, I would encourage you. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say in that case, again, I don't have the specifics of it, but I would just encourage you to resubmit that payment request, or if you could just send the reference number to the EN Payments Help Desk and let us take a look at it.
Okay, taking note on that. And going back to the 24-month, another lady called me, and she started working last year in July, and she was having a lot of problems. She said she wanted to sign her ticket with us, which we've been working with her, help her redo her resume. Then she submitted all of her pay earnings to us so that we can submit it to Social Security. Can we, by putting together a resume and work with her and the employer, same employer, can we submit a payment for phase one, milestone one, for that or not? Or we can submit a payment, but also a proof of a relationship as well. Will we get paid? If she started working last year in July, now we are in 22.
Right, as long as the tickets are signed, you do have, we're looking at that 24-month window. So
Okay. You're
still within the 24-month window. So, yes, if you're going to require, if you're going to submit for phase one, milestone one, with your earnings, you want to submit proof of relationship. And if you, like you said, you have pay stubs, those pay stubs would serve as your proof of relationship. So, yes, you're well within your window of time as long as the ticket is assigned to you and as long as they are as long as phase one, milestone one is available, then, yeah, you should be able to submit for payment. But, again, it's based on if they're available. So I would encourage you to go ahead and submit.
Okay. How many pay stubs should I go? Should I do all of them starting from last year, July, up until this date, or is there a certain number of pay stubs, including the proof of relationship? I'm just wanting to know the cutoff line for submitting pay stubs.
No, so, again, we're looking at the 24-month window. So I always encourage ENs, if you have proof of you have your pay stubs, please submit them. So the proof of relationship is required for phase one milestones 1 through 3, right? So you want to make sure you always provide the pay stubs for that. And we need the earnings information. So if you have the pay stubs but we don't have the earnings in the system, then we're not going to be able to pay you unless we have earnings. So I would encourage you to submit for your payments and include your pay stubs or submit your pay stubs.
Okay. And one thing, too, I wanted to say, which is last, and maybe someone can, call in and give me their opinion, or you give me your opinion, too. Employers now, as far as pay stubs, employers now are just submitting to the beneficiary by phone or email or whatever, how much their earnings are when they make a deposit. And a lot of beneficiaries are just sending me not the exact photo of their pay stub, but something they receive from their employer for the total amount of hours, number of hours they worked, the gross pay, and net. And that's it. So is this acceptable? Because I contacted the Chamber of Commerce, and they did agree with me. Yes, employers now are changing the way they notify their employees about how much their earnings are and what they're earning. They don't submit check. They don't give them a verbatim of the actual check stuff.
So it sounds like that might be, is that an employer prepared earnings statement? Do you actually have one? Yeah. So employer prepared, if that's, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
So if it's an employer prepared earnings statement, that is acceptable for earnings. But again, you still would need to provide your proof of relationship.
Okay. All right. That wouldn't be no.
So the only thing is, So the only thing is, when you're providing proof of relationship, it's either pay stubs or a completed proof of relationship form. So the only thing that stands alone as proof of relationship would be pay stubs. So if you're submitting any other type of evidence of earning, you're going to need to make sure you also include your completed POR form or proof of relationship form.
Okay. All right, because the first time I just sent in the check stub, because it used to be where we just sent in, at least for me, where we sent in the check pay stubs, and that was enough. But now it sounds like we have to not only send in a copy of the earning statement or check stubs, we have to also include the proof of relationship as well. So either or. I'm just want to make sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you're good. Again, if you send in pay stubs, that is your proof of relationship. That is your proof of earnings. So pay stubs take care of all of that. If you're not submitting pay stubs and you're submitting any other type of evidence of earnings, example, the employer-prepared earnings statement, that employer-prepared earnings statement will satisfy your earnings, the earnings requirement, of course, if they're at trial work level or SGA. That satisfies the earnings. But you still have to submit proof of relationship with that, and that's
okay.
That poor form. Okay?
Okay. I've got it.
So, of course, pay stubs are always best. If you have pay stubs, send them in. That's preferred, but we do understand sometimes you use other earning source. But that's where we are with your proof of relationship. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay, Cody, let me just switch over, and do we have any questions from the chat?
Yes, hi, Kim. There is a question in the chat regarding the when to expect the 2022 payments at a glance form, and it appears that the TPM is working on getting this form posted to the website. So hopefully that payment at a glance will be posted up real soon.
Thank you, Rebecca. That is true. We will have that document posted no later than the first week of February, because we do realize that the first month that the ENs can actually use those, or those rates apply, will be for this month, which is January. So we will have that posted within the first week of February. And we will notify ENs once we post that information. Any other questions, Rebecca?
And, yes, there was a question in regard to the POR, which we've already discussed, but if pay stubs are submitted, does the proof of relationship form needs to be submitted with it? And we've answered that. As far as pay stubs, we do not need a POR for phase one milestones if the pay stubs are submitted. It's either or.
Right. That is correct. Thank you. And we can take one more from the chat if we have it. If not, we can go back to the phone line. All right. Thank you so much. All right. And, Cody, do we have any questions in the queue?
Yeah, we do have several questions in the queue now. We'll take our next question from Al Olag.
Hello.
Hi, Al.
Good morning. Hi, how are you? I have a quick question pertaining to the monthly earnings estimator. A couple of days ago, I experienced a nightmare. Anyway, I submitted for payment requests, and for a particular month, and I do the estimator, and it was TWL, clearly TWL. And the end quote, the payment was submitted, the payment request was submitted, it got denied. The statement that came back and said insufficient funds, proof of funds. So went back and forth, and finally found out that I guess the person, the payment specialist has a different calculator, because according to that, later was explained to me by the help desk and very professional people, very helpful. They, I was told that the pay dates had a play into this, and therefore, based on the payment specialist, I didn't have sufficient proof of income. So that's a very difficult subject here, because apparently this employment the payment specialist has a different calculator. And why can't we have the same calculator? Because I submitted correctly. It was TWL, yet the payment specialist, I guess it was later explained that it had to do with pay dates, and I didn't have the monies in there. So
right, and
can you explain that? Or,
Al, sure. I just wanted to explain first that the earnings estimator tool is just a resource for employment networks. So it's just a tool that's provided for you guys to kind of plug in your information that you have and kind of see, like you said, what's trial work level, what's SGA. But please understand that when you're submitting for payments, that the payment staff may also have access to other information, right? So it could be benefit status, you know, earned in a month versus paid in a month, depending on the entitlement code. So the earning estimator tool, again, is just a resource for you guys to use. But when you're requesting payment, we use all available resources that we have that's in SSA's database. So, again, Al, with this type of case, we would need to look at the details of the case just to see where, you know, what actually happened that determined the denial. So, again, I know you've reached out to the help desk, but I would like to take a look at the case because I don't know everything about the case, but I do know that sometimes the payment specialists, you know, they do have access.
I accept that explanation, and I want to compliment Tamika, who's the one that explained it. Went out of her way to explain this. So here's the deal. It has to do, again, with poor communication on the part. The person could have said, instead of saying earnings insufficient, they should have made a statement as saying to the fact that due to the pay date or et cetera, you know, we need to submit, it's not qualified for a TWL. But again, it's poor communication. How much more difficult is it for this person? Just put in why was denied instead of saying insufficient documentation. So I'm thinking when I'm faxing that it's a paper copy that arrives, then, and they go in and say maybe they misplaced one of the pages, one of the sheets. But I was told that it goes to a computer, and then it comes out, well, they didn't input all the data, and all of that's so confusing. But everything could have been resolved if this person that makes the notes, or these persons, it would just provide more detail instead of just stating that insufficient documentation received. So anyway, that's why I have another question, though, that's around the same subject. It has to do with the secure portal. We went to a designated month. It says earnings established, okay? So based on our information, we just send that sheet. We don't have to send pay stubs. Well, it got denied. Again, the same statement, insufficient funds. I have to send pay stubs. And I said, I'm trying to figure it out. What's going on here? I said, we're complying. And, well, again, the help desk came through and explained. They said, you cannot depend on that secure portal, because they may check and have other issues, et cetera. But instead of explaining, they'll say that they didn't get the sufficient documentation or didn't get the pay stubs.
Right. And I definitely understand. I just want to address the first part. You know, it sounds like to me one of the concerns, and we will definitely review this. Is the denial comments, because we want to make sure there is a denial reason, but we want to make sure that the denial comments are clear. And Al, that's definitely something that we can revisit and see how we can, you know, if we need to kind of change the or modify, if you will, the denial comments. Because we want to make sure that if your case is being denied, that you are clear in the understanding of why. So that's something, thank you for that. That's something that we will consider, we will review, is looking at the different denial comments.
Well, this,
as it relates to the portal, I'm sorry, sir.
This has always been a constant that people get tired of putting down the information. It has to do with communication. And again,
and I understand. And one of the ways that we communicate is through those denials. So that's why whether we're speaking to you on the phone, whether we're emailing, whether we're it's something pulling from the portal, we want to make sure that the way we communicate things are clear. And I'm so glad to hear that the help desk was helpful and able to provide you with the information that you needed. Added resource, like I said, is a denial reason along with the comments. So that's something that we can definitely work on. And hopefully, like you said, it's ongoing, but hopefully, you know, we can address it and we can make it a little better. And far as the portal, when you have the message earnings already proven or earnings already established, yes, that does not automatically guarantee payment because the portal could be pulling from different sources, right? And again, once your payment request comes in and we do an assessment of that payment, we are basing it on the available resources that we have. So even though you may have received the message earnings already proven, those earnings may not be what's needed to satisfy the payment, or it could be something else, another part of the criteria that's not met. Again, I think that goes back to making sure that the denial reason is correct and that the denial comments are clear. And again, that's definitely something that we will work on.
You could include that you made an excellent comment. Says good. The reply says earning, even though it's established, they should put earnings do not meet or satisfy payment, and that would be sufficient so people know what's going on. The other input I have is basically rhetorical, I guess. We're talking about the 24-month rule. What is it for the self-employed? Under self-employed, we never really receive good guidance or any guidance because it's going to take more than 24 months for the self-employed, and I think they have to make different provisions for that 24-month rule. You know, you go in to submit the taxes on time. You have to wait a year before they submit the taxes. And then another year, people are late. I think they should adjust that 24-month rule for the self-employed. It's just it's not equitable.
Yep. Well, that suggestion is noted, Al. But just to answer your question for right now, as it stands, that 24-month age claim rule does apply to self-employed beneficiaries. And you're right, they do have to file their taxes, and that information has to post into the system. So at this point, right, is just continue to encourage your beneficiaries or your ticket holders to submit their file their taxes timely so that we can get that information posted. And like you said, sometimes it takes like a year, but again, you have a whole another year to submit. But right now, as it stands, it is the 24-month age claim rule does apply to all payments. But again, your suggestion is noted about, you know, an exception for self-employed beneficiaries. But to answer your question before moving on, right now, it applies to all payments. But I do appreciate your questions, Al, as usual. Great questions. Thank you.
Right now,
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Tim Gibson.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Kimberly. How are you doing? Hey.
I'm well.
I'm good. I'm good. I haven't talked to you in a while. I appreciate this. You know, the last call was really, you know, I think, insightful for me. Being that I have my question is really kind of in that same line. It was dealing with, I think, communication. It's two-part question. The first more important question is the proof of relationship form. I totally understand the significance of making sure that we submit that evidence if we don't have the pay stubs. Totally on board with that. Where I think the communication is one of the key words here is it's a beneficiary. Actually, we had a beneficiary in this example, submitted pay stubs. It was back in October. And we of course, received payment because that was the proof that we have a relationship with that beneficiary. After that, we actually have requested and we're still waiting for the beneficiary to provide us with the last year earnings because there's a lot of earnings we're asking her to provide. And at this point, we were seeing that there's earnings already in the system. So, and then we then, of course, verified with the beneficiary that is still working with the same company, actually got raised. We were requesting for a payment again, and since the new payment was available. But in fact, after that first payment back in October, we've submitted 5 times for the same amount of payments, and we were denied. And what the reason for my question is, so we can get clarity for training purposes, is there a way for us to find out who that person is that's denying the request?
Yeah.
Is that like evidence, I mean, is that communication that can be provided to the EN so we can at least be able to maybe speak with that person through the EN payments help desk email?
Unfortunately not, because there are different people that are processing payments, right? No person is assigned to just one EN. So there could be multiple people processing your cases. And when it comes to the proof of relationship, Tim, like you said, just to be clear, it is something that's required for phase one milestones 1-3. What we do, of course, you can always reach out to the help desk if your case is denied and you have questions about it. Please feel free to work out. We do have a dedicated help desk staff that can look at that case. So they can actually see everything that the person that processed the case. So, example, if I was the one that processed the case and I denied it and you called the help desk and the representative there pulled up that case, they can see exactly what I saw real time with processing it. So they would be able to answer your questions just as I would if I was denied it. And everyone that processes payments follows the same rules. So they don't change based on persons, you know, a person. They all follow the process. So unfortunately, no, we don't release the name of the individual that processed the payment. But again, whoever you speak with on the help desk can see exactly what they saw.
I gotcha. And so Amanda, who's out Godsend, I've been working with her. She actually will call back and speak with our team if there's any follow up. And she did in fact follow up with her supervisor Keila. Who are the supervisors there now? Is that Akila? Is you? Who's all the? Is it Rebecca?
You can actually just. No. We're not gonna call names. You could just send your email to the help desk, of course. And then if you request to speak with the supervisor, then at that time, you know, someone will definitely reach out. But we're all here.
No
problem. We're all here to help, right?
No, absolutely. No, Kim, listen, I used to work with you a lot as you were doing note of us. But I guess the other part of it, and this is for, you know, helicopter view, is so we did, in fact, submit the proof relationship form and was detailed in kind of like the details were, I guess, subjective because one side might say, oh, this is, that's the part where we're following the guidelines. I'm trying to find, that's my last question. So since it's like subjective, right, because if we write the form, fill out the form, and we put the date and we put the description of what the services we provided for that particular month and year, even day, month, day, and year, and we kind of, it falls in line with the IWP, where I guess the disconnect is if I call in and speak with Amanda and she contacts and finds out, well, what's going on with this particular case, and it comes back and there's no information other than what was in, of course, you can see that in the portal too, like the notes that you guys have made on case, but there's no additional information. The other quest is to ask to do it again, and we have done it 4 additional times after getting a pay stub.
Right.
Where the subjective part of it is, where can we make sure that we can tell our whole team, this is how, and even to everyone that's on the call, how to approach this in a way so everybody that does a pre-relationship form knows what to expect. So do you guys have, like, any future trainings about how to do a pre-relationship form so we can all be able to do it? And then for this particular case, can you look into it, Kimberly, to see how we can move forward with this particular case? Because it has been, you know, since October, and we've been requesting this, and it's still January.
Yeah, and that's a good topic, Tim. And see, when I mentioned, you know, we invite you to share your topic, we can definitely put that as a suggestion for an agenda topic for maybe the next call. But just wanted to let you know, plain and simple is when you're submitting proof of relationship, right, if you're not submitting, you're submitting your form, you want to make sure that that proof of relationship form details date and with the services that you provided. Attempted contact does not show proof of relationship. And so if you're asking for, just remember, if you're asking for whatever milestone you're asking for, you need to make sure that you have proven or that you've shown proof of relationship during the milestone period. So attempting contact is not proof of relationship, so it has to be an actual service that you provided or positive contact with your beneficiary. And just as an example of a positive contact, you know, spoke with ticket holder, reviewed possible job leads. That's proof of relationship. What's not proof of relationship is sent email to ticket holder to update contact information. So we definitely can add this to a topic, Tim, but just remember for you and your staff, when you're completing your POR form, remember you are showing us how you have established proof of relationship. Proof of relationship has to come from a positive contact or service provided during the milestone period. Attempted contact does not work. And you have to be clear, if you send an email, you may email the beneficiary job leads. Okay, you sent them job leads. That is a service. But just saying sent an email on October 12th, that does not show proof of relationship. So you want to be very detailed when you're submitting that, and you want to make sure that not only are you're showing us service provided, positive contact with the ticket holder, but you want to make sure that the dates of service are within the milestone period that you're requesting. Hopefully that that clears things up for you. And again, thank you. I can definitely add this as a topic. Yes, Ms. Tennessee?
I think that last time that you called for questions in the chat, and believe me, we have a lot of questions, over 100 in the chat that we've been trying to keep up with. But when you asked about it before, I hit the wrong button and hung up because I did have some. And I know we're close to closing now, but I wanted to respond to this one question because I don't know how many others have this issue. So I'm going to read this one question for everybody. And this came from Molly Hall. What she's written is, I was told that in order to get paid for a beneficiary who I have not yet received payments for, I need to make an initial payment request in the portal in order to start payments in ePay. In other words, ePay will not pay me for a new beneficiary unless I make a request in the portal first. Is this correct? I don't recall this being the case in the past. Well, the answer to that is no. For one thing, I don't know what that first request could be, but it might be a phase one milestone 1 through 3, and we don't pay those through ePay. Any requests that you have, you should submit those through the portal with the whatever the requirements, whether it's earnings information or forms or whatever. Now, once we had that information, because ePay, we pretty much look at phase one milestone 4, phase two milestones, and outcomes. So, and the file is created based on earnings that SSA has. So if there's a payment that you have not received, let's say you have received all phase one milestones 1 through 3 and you submitted those through the portal, well, there may be enough earnings in SSA system for phase one milestone 4. And we can do that through ePay because you do not have to submit a proof of relationship form for phase one milestone 4. But in order to start your payments, you more than likely, if you're a milestone outcome EN, and you're going to submit phase one milestones, you would have to do that through the ticket portal. Okay?
All right. Thank you so much, Ms. Tennessee. And you're right, we are at the close of our call today, but I do want to, you know, it is unfortunate, you know, that we're not able to answer all of your calls. You know, sometimes we have a lot of calls. All of your questions. Sometimes we have a lot of questions. Sometimes we don't, right? But I want to encourage you to reach out to the payments help desk for your questions. As you can hear, some ENs have noted that they're doing a great job on the help desk. Kudos to Tamika and Amanda, who are help desk agents. So please, if your question was not answered on this call, please use the resources that I mentioned right before I concluded with the presentation part. You can see that information. Please, you know, call the payments help desk, send them an email without personal identifiable information, just to make sure that we're getting your questions answered. And again, if you have any topics, thank you, Tim. That's something that we can add, completing the POR form. We can add that as a topic. And I do encourage you, if you have additional topics or any topics that you would like for us to cover, payments related, of course, during this form, please send that information over to the EN Payments Help Desk at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. So, again, thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Ms. Tennessee, for the questions in the chat. And at this point, or at this time, I just want to thank everyone for their participation. Very good questions today. Thank you all for joining today's call, and we do hope that you will join us again for our next scheduled call. Looks like it's scheduled for April 26th. So, again, if you got any topics, make sure to get them in to us. But thank you for your time today. Talk with you on April 26th, and please enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference. We do thank you all for your participation. You may now disconnect.